When Andrew asked me to be part of this series, I was initially very honored and flattered, and then I thought, what do I know about aging? You've chosen some timely topics. I mean, he talked about sex, last week was mental health. I'm talking about getting old, and then there's food. So I feel right at home. So a car hits an old man, and the paramedics rush over, and they lift his head carefully, and they ask him, are you comfortable? And the man says, I make a good living. I also want to acknowledge the sadness for so many of us this week with the very sudden death of Archbishop Terry Finley. And a pastor, a preacher, so many wonderful gifts he brought to so many of us. And that's put an extra level of sobriety and reality to my presentation tonight, that someone that we loved and cared for and knew in so many different ways has no longer with us and is with the communion of saints. And I'm very, very aware of, once again, the shortness and uncertainty of human life. When we get older, things come back to us. And one of the opportunities in this chapter of life, and I'll talk more about it, but one of the opportunities is to think about what are those continuing themes that have been part of your life, part of my life? What are those themes that go back even to elementary school, to good teachers, to opportunities for volunteer work? What are the continuing themes of your life? Because in this chapter we have an opportunity to pursue those. And my continuing theme has been curiosity about people. And as I look back on my life now, I realize I'm interested in people. Not everyone is. Some people find people a drag. But I've always been fascinated, and I've been fascinated not with people in the general way, but in the specific personal life. Each person's life, that's been of great interest to me, and it continues to be an interest. And I think that's one of the reasons Andrew asked me if I would speak to you tonight. The topic is spirituality and aging, spirituality of aging, spirituality, aging, spirituality. Defined as the quality of being concerned with the human spirit, the deepest values and meanings of our life by which we live, the quality or the state of being spiritual. So spirituality is about the human spirit and the interest in that and the practice of our own spiritual selves. Aging is the process of growing old. A period of maturation. I like the whole wine thing. You know, the older the wine gets, most of the time, you know those radio programs where somebody calls in and says they have a 1942 bottle of something and the fellow on the radio says salad dressing. But there are things in life that benefit from maturation and aging. And it's measured by years from birth. So tonight what I want to do is I want to begin with a prayer, and I want to talk about that. So would you join me, and we say together, it's on the screen, this famous prayer. Let us pray. God, give us grace to with serenity the things that cannot be changed, courage to change the things that ought to be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. Amen. The topic tonight, spirituality and aging, and I want to anchor that in this prayer. And I want to do that for several reasons. One of them is that this is the season of Lent. And as the priest said at the beginning of Lent, this is a time for us to observe a holy Lent. By self-examination, penitence, prayer, fasting and almsgiving. So prayer is part of our season. It's also part of our ongoing practice to pray. So there were a whole pile of ways I could have approached this. It's one of those great opportunities. If you've been invited to speak about something, you know, initially you think, oh, great. And then you start to look at it and you think, oh, my goodness. Because spirituality and aging is a huge and growing field. As people live longer, with longer life expectancy, good health, nutrition, medical care, and other things, there is a growing interest in studying what makes for a good life. For example, a spiritual Buddhist teacher named Lewis Richmond has come up with these five. This is just one example of some of the things that are out there about how to live well. Gratitude, saying thank you. Generosity, reframing, by which he means our perspective, our attitude. Curiosity and flexibility. These five things, he says, are the medicine for longevity and health. And research shows that people with an active involvement in a church or spiritual community live on the average, get this, live on the average 7 years longer. This is a Buddhist teacher talking about these five things. And there are other examples. I could have come up with other lists, but I decided not to. I decided rather, in the end, to focus on prayer. And I thought, that's something that we all do. That's something we all do in our own way. We all pray. We may not call it that, but in our society now, so often we say, and we hear others say, particularly public figures, our thoughts and prayers are with you. And you and I know that relatives, family members, friends, neighbors who are not overtly religious or part of an organized religious community will often talk about prayer or have a sense of praying, especially when things don't work out and there is a difficult and challenging time ahead. So I decided to focus on prayer because it's at the heart of who we are. So let's just talk about that for a minute. As followers of Jesus, what did Jesus bring to the equation in terms of his work and presence in the long history of humankind? What did Jesus bring that was different? What difference does Jesus make? Well, Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, has written a new book called Being Christian. It's a very, very simple book, a very straightforward book. Archbishop Rowan Williams, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, and he says that it seems that all Christian reflection, all theology worth the name, began as people realized that because of Jesus Christ, they could talk to God in a different way. It's an interesting idea, isn't it? That we can talk to God in a different way. They could talk to God differently. And if Jesus somehow makes a difference in how we talk to God, then maybe somehow that changes our understanding of God. And so what the Archbishop was talking about, I like Latin words, lex orandi, lex credendi. This means the law of prayer, orandi, is the law of belief, that prayer precedes belief. And when you think about it, actually, experience precedes principle. So often we feel that we might be being brainwashed by principles before we've had the experience, instead of having the experience and thinking, what kind of principle does this point to? So, for example, the book of Exodus is the second book of the Hebrew Bible. The first book is the book of Genesis. But if you reverse the order, then you come to this amazing idea that the first thing that happened was that the slaves were led to freedom. They were facing death in the Red Sea, and they were led across the Red Sea to freedom in the Promised Land. And that then, from the vantage point of safety and security and freedom, led them to read back into their history and say, what kind of a God is this? A God who created us for freedom. So prayer is an experience that precedes then the principle of who God is for us and how we understand what that's all about. As Duke Ellington said, everyone prays in their own language, and there is no language God does not understand. I was giving a speech once, and it was really thick. It was really tense in my mind. Everything didn't make sense. I was really, if the truth be told, was trying to show off. I was really way over everybody's head, and I actually didn't believe a thing I was talking about, but I thought I was being quite impressive. Beside me was a piano. A little voice said, "Shut up and play the piano," in my mind. A little voice said, "Shut up and play the piano." And I kept going on about this and this and this, and everybody was, oh my goodness. And so then I said, because I needed, this voice was driving me nuts, I said, "In order to give you time to digest these very complex ideas, I'm going to play the piano." So I did. People came up to me after and said, "I don't know what you were talking about, but the piano was nice." So tonight I'm going to play a few times, just for time, because it's a beautiful piano. And music does give us time to reflect and to be together. I used to have a handle on life, but it broke. So I want to talk about prayer and aging. Because aging is really about living well. It's about living well. Living well as long as we can, as well as we can. Not everyone is given a long life. Not everyone is given the opportunity to live well for a whole variety of reasons. Some lives are really challenging. But I have had the benefit in my family and in my work in ministry, in my friendships, to come to know people who live really well, people who have lived well. How many funerals have we been to where someone would say, "A good life, well lived"? That's the goal. Jesus said, "I came that they might have life and have it abundantly." I've also, by contrast, known people who live shortened, bitter lives. People who, out of fear or hatred, have turned in on themselves. So have you heard the one about how Joe takes a week every summer to relax at his friend's cabin in the north? And one night he just arrived. He's sitting by the fire when there's a knock on the door. He opens the door and doesn't see anything until he looks down. On the wooden porch, he sees a small snail. Annoyed, he picks up the snail and throws it as far as he can in the woods. 3 years later, Joe is back at the cabin for another summer retreat. There's a knock on the door. He opens it and sees no one. Then he remembers. He looks down, and there's the same snail. And the snail says, "What the hell was that all about?" Abundant life is about living well. Abundant life is about doing our best. Doing our best. Isn't that not what God require, that we do our best? The greatest thing you'll ever learn, goes the old tune in Nature Boy, great lyric, the greatest thing you'll ever learn is to love and be loved in return. Benjamin Franklin said, those who love deeply never grow old. They may die of old age, but they die young. Those who love deeply, think of this, those who love deeply never grow old. How many people do we know who love deeply and don't grow old? Their bodies may age, but they, as people, as spirits, as souls, as persons, don't grow old. One particularly useful concept for me has been the two halves of life. This is from Carl Jung, the psychiatrist, the Swiss psychiatrist. And the two halves of life, and this has been popularized recently by Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R, in his book, Falling Upward, very interesting paradoxical title, Falling Upward, A Spirituality for the Two Halves of Life. He writes, based on Jung's concept, there's much evidence on several levels that there are at least two major tasks to human life. The first task is to build a strong container or identity. The second is to find the contents that the container was meant to hold. We're in the second half of life, most of us. The second half of life. We don't need to build an identity. We have a container. The first half of life is building those things that give us the basis in life to live. Work, career, security, family, partnership, those kind of things that define who we are in the first half of life. The second half of life is, who are we? And so many people spend the second half of life still chasing the dream of the first half of life, more of the identity, as opposed to, who are you? What's inside this container that has been given? As we age, these questions become more prominent. We have more time. We have more mental bandwidth. We aren't occupied in the same way of raising a family or nurturing a career or dealing with all the other realities in the first half of life. We can go deeper into who we are and more deeply spiritually. So while I hope what I'm offering tonight is helpful to everyone, I'm particularly focusing on the second half of life.